Graphic Audio, a movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents the Nuclear Bombshell Series by John Zakur and Lawrence Ganem. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by David Coyne, Yasmin Twazan, Stephen Carpenter, Alyssa Wilmoth, Sherry Berg, Danny Gavigan, Elizabeth Jernigan, Casey Platt, Nora Ashrati, Lily Beacon, Michael Glenn, Colleen Delaney, Ken Jackson, Nanette Savard, Joe Brack, Terrence Aselford, Thomas Keegan, Tracy Oliveira, Katie Karkoff, Joel David Santner, James Konacek, Faith Potts, Nathaniel Perry, Gary Tells, Thomas Penny, Mort Shelby, Nick DiPinto, Bradley Smith, and Eric Messner. The Frost-Haired Vixen.
The holographic name on my door reads Zachary Nixon Johnson, PI. That's mostly correct. My name is Zachary Nixon Johnson. That's what you get when you let your fiancé's brother program your door. Sure, the door would be easy to reprogram, but I can't hurt my future brother-in-law's feelings. I look at it like this. It separates me from the crowd even more. Besides, most people either call me Zach or Johnson, or in the case of the New Frisco Police Force, that damn Zachary Johnson. And that's when they're in a good mood. You would think, being the last freelance private detective on a planet with 15 billion beings, every day would be an action-packed adventure. Only this is 2061, the peak of the over-the-top information age, a time when everybody has access to more information than any human, meta-human, or even bot could ever want or need. For the most part, clients only enlist my services when the information they need is particularly sensitive. In other words, it's so dangerous any sane person would avoid it like 10-credit sushi. Somehow, some way, whenever trouble does teleport to my front door, it's always of the earth-shaking variety. That's just my lot in life, my pile of spam to sift through. I've learned to accept that I will either be figuratively bored to death, or some person, mutant, robot, android, alien, animal, and yes, once even a vegetable, will literally try to kill me. I find it's best if I don't ponder it too much. Today, though, was a quiet day. Quiet days may not be the stuff of great adventure, but they are the stuff that let me recharge for upcoming great adventures. Life's like a roller coaster ride. The highs wouldn't be nearly as fun without the lows. I was sitting in my office on the New Frisco docks, enjoying a nice game of holobackgammon with my annoying but mostly trusty holographic assistant, Harv, who had me on the ropes.
Looks like I'm going to backgammon you again, Zach, which means you'll owe me 10 more credits.
That's only because you're the one who rolls the dice, Harv. I turned away from the board Harv was projecting onto my desk and slid open one of my desk drawers.
What are you doing?
I'm looking for my real backgammon board. The one with non-computer-generated dice.
Oh, Zach. Remember, you sold that one last month at a charity auction of E-Square Bay to generate some extra money for Electra.
Oh, that's right.
Of course that's right.
Since Harv is a hologram, he can appear in any form he chooses. Over the years, he's picked some dandies. From cowboy to ace detective to hot babe. I like to block out that one, except when I can use it to my advantage. Today, he was in his favorite mode, snooty, aging English butler. In this form, he was mostly bald, with patches of graying hair running along his temples and circling around the lower area of his head. His eyes were just wide enough to make it clear when he was giving condescending looks. His nose would hardly be noticeable, except he accented it with a little handlebar mustache and usually had it sticking up in the air. He was wearing a better-than-tailor-fitted gray Ralph Lauren C, that C stands for clone, suit, and black bow tie. I think Harv enjoys acting as a butler because, even when he's serving me, he still gets to look down on me.
Zach, first you make such a big deal about me finding one for you. Then the nano you need a few extra credits, you sell it off.
I wanted to make a special contribution to Electra's clinic. After all, she puts up with a lot.
Now, that may very well be the understatement of the century. Oh, you're fixating on the sexy sprockets case again.
Maybe. It's the reason I needed to sell my real Beck Emmonport to get the cash for Electra's clinic. I only ended up making 52 credits because of all those lawsuits. I still can't believe she works on the World Council now.
Oh, Zach, let it go. You saved the world, made a few credits, and didn't get killed despite numerous attempts. You should be happy. Now, back to more important matters. My victory.
I don't know why Harb took such great joy in constantly beating me at backgammon. It worried me a little. I decided, like many things, it was best not to think about it too much. I knew when the chips hit the fan, Harb had my back. Eventually. I can't help thinking that you might load the dice.
You're acting like a typical human, trying to blame your computer for your inadequacies. By the way, I just rolled you a nice 2 and a 4.
I looked over the board. There are times when a 2 and a 4 can be a handy roll. This wasn't one of those times. In fact, it was a roll that would leave me wide open. Thanks, Harv. You're all silicone.
Hey, Zach. My chips just let the dice fall where they may. You don't have to be me, the most advanced cognitive processor on Earth, to generate a random number between 1 and 6.
Harv looked at me. I glared at him. Until just a few months ago, Harv and I actually were linked together. Literally. He was connected through my optic nerve to my brainstem. It was an experiment developed by my very brilliant and almost as mad friend, Dr. Randy Poole. He wanted to see how a human-computer nanolink would benefit man and computer. But mostly computer. Harv, for his part, got to interact with a human brain on a constant basis. Randy's theory was this would be good for Harv, as it would help him grow to be more than he was designed to be. He would become greater than the sum of his nanochips. If you ask me, which nobody did, it was working. Before our link, Harv had only a very rudimentary sense of humor. He could recite a joke easily enough, but he couldn't tell a joke. He was unable to comprehend what made funny funny. In the time we, for lack of a better word, were bonded, he grew. Upgraded. Harv is loath to admit this. Randy recently removed the chipset for modifications. He insisted he needed to add more shielding to it. Not for me, mind you, but for Harv. He was worried that my personality was tainting Harv too much. I'm pretty positive he wanted Harv to be more human, but less like me. Randy emailed me a couple of days ago, or was it weeks, saying the upgrade was complete, and I could have it stuck into my brain at any time. Though Randy used much more technical terms than stuck into my brain. I've been purposely avoiding it. Why? I'm not really sure.
After this game, you will owe me 100 credits.
Why do you care? You're a computerized hologram. You don't need the credits.
It's the thought that counts.
You don't think. You just simulate thinking.
There's nothing simulated about my thinking. You don't have to have an organic collection of white and gray matter to think.
That's what you think you think.
Quit stalling and make
Zach,
a move.
Zach, you have a visitor.
I won't deny that I was pleased when Carol's image superimposed itself over Harv. Not only did it let me put off the game, but Carol was a lot easier on the eyes and the mind than Harv. She was back to her old self, a cut above normal humans. She could still stop traffic with her looks or her brain, but she was no longer bordering on godlike. In her time with me, Carol has seen everything from amorous aliens to zany killer bots made of zinc. She handles it all coolly and in stride. I was worried at the prospect of someone who could get Carol this wound up. Harv looked at me, looking at Carol.
If this was a threatening situation, don't you think Carol or I would have warned you by now?
Carol, yes. You, I'm not so sure.
Touché, Zach. But you worry too much.
When you're me, there's no such thing as worrying too much. Remember how the networks wanted to try to kill me week after week for a reality show?
Oh, please. That was just the phone network. They didn't want to kill you that badly. Then they wouldn't have a show.
What about that time when the Grandma Assassin tried to strangle me with her pantyhose in Ultra Mega Hypermart?
Well, you did have 17 items in a 15-item line. You can't blame her for being mad. If it wasn't for me augmenting your muscles, she might have killed you.
That's only because she was bionic.
Of course, there was that time you got attacked while guest umpiring a girls' softball game between New Vegas showgirls and cocktail waitresses. Only you could turn a fun charity event into a fight for your life. That was great the way that Melissa girl took you out.
Hey, she hit me with a blindside tackle.
Then when that Jody girl jumped in, pelting you with softballs.
They aren't soft at all. Especially where she was hitting me.
Oh, Zach, don't be such a whiner. It's not like you weren't wearing your underwear armor.
Which is exactly my point. How many other people do you know that need to wear carbon steel reinforced underwear?
Don't forget computer enhanced. Those two ordinary little waitresses would have been using you for home plate if it wasn't for me.
They weren't ordinary, they were mutants, for Gates' sake. They both played in the female all-tackle mud rugby league before they became New Vegas waitresses.
I understand that league makes an excellent training ground for cocktail waitresses.
Zach, it's not only bad business, but rude to keep clients waiting.
Trust me, you'll be okay.
Whenever you say that, I never am.
At least in the short term. I guarantee it. If you die, I'll forget about those credits you owe me.
You're not going to tell me who it is?
Harv just gave me his patented, really, it is, sly grin.
Okay, Carol, send them in. Harv, turn off the game.
This isn't going to save you from losing.
Quit being a panium, Harv. Go to stealth mode before I find a way to unplug you.
Fine.
Harv and the backgammon board disappeared. My wall screens changed to a nice black background. Without the shimmering holographic computer or the information-filled interactive wall screen, my office looked like it was yanked out of some 100-year-old classic PI flick. It was the office of a guy who won't take spam from anybody. I tried to clear my mind. I was pretty certain Harv was right, as usual. Whoever it was didn't have hostile intentions. Experience has taught me that most assassins don't politely wait in the reception area before they kill you. Still, these are strange times. It was possible, however unlikely, that my guest was a very polite-trained killer who had mentally overpowered Carol and somehow managed to reprogram Harv into thinking he wasn't a threat. When you're in my line of work and the universe is tattooed "kick me hard on your butt," there's no such thing as being too paranoid. I spun around to greet the door as it started to open. I was ready to move my wrist in just the right way that makes my trusty Colt 46 version 3B pop up from my sleeve into my hand, just in case. I tensed. A woman sauntered into the room. This wasn't any woman. For starters, she had more curves than a road up the Alps, only these curves were in all the right places. She was wearing a light red sin fur, micro mini dress trimmed with fluffy white cotton. The entire outfit was accented by her hot red boots with 3-centimeter-high heels. On anybody else, it would have looked ridiculous, but on her it looked sensuous. Like she was born, or in this case, created to wear it. Her hair was a frosty white that danced down over her shoulders. Her skin was creamy smooth, like virgin snow. Her green eyes twinkled, giving her the appearance of the perfect blend of wise, caring, and oh so voluptuous. There was something warming and calming, yet extremely arousing about her. She was both yin and yang.
Mr. Johnson, how nice it is to meet you in person.
Santana?
In person. Sorry, I couldn't resist throwing in the ho-ho-ho. Though my marketing elves insist that's so last sen.
I stood up and held out my hand.
What brings you this far south?
I was familiar with Santana. After all, everyone on Earth is. Santana and her team of highly skilled elves and bots have been operating for over 20 years now. The World Council created them as a way to instill joy and unity into the entire world's population. Santana is the CEO and all-around head honcho of the North Pole Organization. It's their job to coordinate the holiday, spelled with a capital H, that special time of year when everybody in the world is given 3 gifts. To my knowledge, she'd never been in New Frisco. For her to be down here knocking at my door, something had to be terribly wrong. I noticed that while her lips may have been smiling, her eyes weren't. At least, not really. This wasn't a personal visit just to see if I was being naughty or nice. She shook my hand. She had a strong, firm grip, like a person who works for a living, which belied her soft look.
Mind if I sit? The synthetic fur doesn't breathe well this far south.
Of course not.
I motioned to the extra chair across from my desk. She sat and wiped a bit of sweat from her brow.
I'm not used to this heat. It's never like this at home. Still, it comes with the job. It's a clean job, but somebody has to do it.
Santana? I'm sure you came here to discuss something besides fashion.
She smiled. Her smile brightened the room, like a halogen star on top of an old Christmas tree.
I see you're all business. Zach, I have a problem.
Go on.
This isn't easy for me to say.
I've noticed.
There's been a killing at the North Pole. I think somebody is trying to destroy the holiday.
A killing at the Pole?
Actually, there have been two killings. Elves M778 and M892.
Two killings? This type of thing wasn't supposed to happen at the Pole. It was the happiest, safest place on the planet. A haven from the real world. I tried to maintain my composure. Are you sure the elves were murdered?
Well, I'm not a professional at this sort of thing, but I'm reasonably certain. M778 was found squished under a 500-kilo bag of toys.
That could have been an accident.
I thought so at first also, but elves aren't prone to accidents. Furthermore, from what we could make out from his mangled body, both his hands and feet were tied. Once I saw that, I ruled out accident.
Good deduction. What about the other elf?
M892 was poisoned while taking a late-night snack and drink.
Poisoned?
Somebody had mixed wine in the elf's eggnog punch. Wine is deadly to elves. Luckily, we found M892 before the next meal cycle, or we would have had a major problem on our hands. Lots of dead elves. Our operation and the holiday surely would have been ruined. We're fortunate our lab works so fast and efficiently.
Have you mentioned any of this to the police?
I couldn't. For one thing, the Pole doesn't come under any jurisdiction. For another, if word leaked out that somebody was trying to destroy the holiday, the public would panic.
Huh. Good thinking.
That's why I came to you, Zack. My elves and security bots are good, but they aren't up to solving a murder mystery. They just aren't designed for that. I need you to find out who is trying to sabotage the holiday. You have to stop him. The happiness of billions is in your hands. If the holiday is cancelled, the very structure of society itself could be ripped apart. Will you take the job? I'll pay whatever your normal rate is.
I stopped and thought about what she said. At a quick mental glance, I thought this talk of society being ripped apart seemed exaggerated. On reflection, it wasn't totally far-fetched. The entire world had come to depend on the holiday. It was a time when everybody, regardless of anything, received three gifts from the North Pole. One gift they picked from the Pole's extensive catalog, and two specially selected fun gifts were chosen by the Pole's crack staff of elf consultants. If something happened to mess that up, who knows how that would impact the world. Of course I'll take the job. Since the job's for such a good cause, I'll even do it for half my normal rate. Santana smiled. For the first time since she'd entered my office, the twinkle in her eyes matched the one in her smile.
You're a good man, Zachary Nixon Johnson.
Let's hope I'm good enough.
Ona Thompson and Sexy Sprockets rave about your service. You saved the day in their cases. I'm sure you can get equally pleasing results with my case.
It's your job to be optimistic, Santana.
Yes, I suppose that is part of the job. Like my elves, I'm made to see the bright side. You'll start immediately?
Yes, I believe my calendar is free. I'll need to make a trip up to the Pole.
Yes, of course. We have a bi-monthly 7-day, 6-night tour of our facilities. The group is limited to 10 people and we're booked years in advance. But I do have a certain leeway to add an extra person now and then. The tour started yesterday, but I can get you in. So somebody on the tour is involved?
I wouldn't bet against it, particularly if the deaths coincided with the arrival of your visitors.
Would your fiancé, Electra, like to join you? It might help make the trip look more like a vacation.
I'll ask her. She's always complaining that I never take her anywhere. She'd be a help examining the bodies. Though, I don't know how much she knows about elf physiology.
Good. Then I'll count on you for sure. If Electra wants to go, just have your computer call my elves. We'll squeeze her in. The more the merrier.
No problem, Santana.
You realize that you have to port to the North Pole. I know how much you deplore porting.
Deplore was way too mild of a word. I hate teleporting even more than I do flying while being audited with Yoko Ono's greatest hits playing in the background as telemarketers try to sell me life insurance. I inhaled slowly. My logical side knew that porting was perfectly safe. Studies by scientists who have far too much time on their hands have shown that the odds of being killed by porting were far less than the odds of getting struck by a bolt of lightning while wearing a rubber suit on a clear day. Despite that, I couldn't help imagining my top half being sent to the pole while my bottom half went to Hawaii. But duty called.
No problem. The fate of the holiday is more important than my fears. Hopefully, Ella loses my luggage.
You don't have to worry about that. No luggage is allowed at the pole. We supply everything. It's part of the price of admission. This way, everybody is equal.
Sounds reasonable in a Marxist kind of way.
You do understand what I mean by no luggage, don't you, Zach?
Santana leaned forward. It was a movement that was much sexier than it should have been.
Santana, you're paying me 5,000 credits a day. Of course I understand what no luggage means. It means I don't bring anything with me. Believe me, I can handle it.
Santana just stared at me. Those big, all-knowing eyes knew that my brain still hadn't made the connection.
At the North Pole, everybody dresses in the same green or red elf suits. Except for me, of course.
So I'll have to wear an elf suit for a couple of days. I'll survive. As long as nobody takes pictures or anything.
I'll give you a hint, Zach. The suits don't have a lot of extra space to hide things up your sleeve.
Oh, my gun. I can't bring my gun.
Very good, Zach. You really are the best.
I can live without my gun. I don't even like the thing. It's just that with some of the characters I deal with, a sidearm is sort of a necessity. I don't really see myself having to shoot any elves at the pole, though.
Body under armor is also restricted.
No problem. It itches when it gets too cold. I don't suppose you allow personal computer communication links?
Sorry, Zach. While at the pole, you have nothing to rely on except your wits.
She pointed to a button on the buckle of her belt. She turned and started to walk away. She was engulfed in a pool of energy, then disappeared.
What the doss?
Harv's holographic form appeared before me.
From the energy readings, I would compute that was a PPTD, a portable personal teleporting device.
I shook my head. No good could come from portable personal teleporting.
What are your initial thoughts on the case?
Nothing to rely on but your wit. Oh, too bad. I always liked the holiday.
I ignored him and started running through potential culprits in my brain. When a problem like Santana's arises, my first instincts are to check out the big corporations. These days, there are four of them who control about most of the action on Earth. Exshell, H-Tech, Entercorp, and Ultramega Hypermart. Exshell is the energy giant. Their motto is, "We sell you the sun." H-Tech specializes in building high-tech devices. Their motto is, "Everything is better in bits." Entercorp controls much of the entertainment industry. Their motto is, "We make fun, more fun." Ultramega Hypermart is the largest chain of retail stores in history. Their motto is, "If we don't sell it, you don't need it." They allege that 99.9999% of the population has purchased at least one item from one of their stores or from their net site. Of course, while all these megacorps may claim to specialize in a particular area, they are all far too greedy not to dip their toes and feet, knees, and most of their other body parts into one another's pools of potential profits.
Harv, find out if any of the big corporations would profit from the demise of the holiday.
Done. All of them make far more profit after the holiday than they do before. It seems the free gifts given by the pole spawns a frenzy of buying other gifts.
Dig deeper. Find out if the holiday upset or rearranged the apple cart. Maybe one of them makes less more than the others?
Less more?
Companies are greedy. Maybe one of them is jealous that the others grew more than it did.
Huh. You humans are strange. I suppose that is possible.
I also need a breakdown of everyone currently touring the pole.
That will take a bit longer. The pole's computer defenses are quite good.
Ask Santana for them.
Well, that's no fun.
Just do it, Harv.
Fine. Done. Her elves say they will have the information for me within hours.
Why so long?
I didn't ask because I'm sure they wouldn't answer. They were quite chipper and peppy, though. Doss, I find them even more annoying than I do humans.
Is it possible for an elf to go bad?
I'm analyzing the psychological profiles of the elves now.
A picture of a smiling elf face appeared on my west wall screen.
It's highly improbable for an elf to go bad, as you put it. While they can be quite irritating, they are built for nothing but kindness and goodness.
Highly improbable, but not impossible, correct?
Of course it's possible. Elves are organic sentient beings created by humans. Nuff said.
Harv, you just said nuff.
Did not.
Did too.
Zach, I assure you that while the word nuff may be in my vast vocabulary database, I would not use it.
Review the last minute.
Harv rolled his eyes, then frowned ever so slightly.
No, I must have been relating to the person I was interacting with. It is within my parameters, you know.
I smiled at him. It wasn't a big smile, just one noticeable enough for him to catch.
I am deleting that word from my database, and I will fervently deny ever using it. It's your word against mine. Who do you think the world will believe?
How did the elves get to the Pole?
They were cloned in New Brazil, then teleported directly to the Pole via a special teleport program solely for delivering elves.
Huh.
What are you thinking, Zack?
It was a well-publicized fact that the World Council created the elves, and for that matter Santana, in their labs. The WC has extensive resources and capabilities. For better or worse, they have their hands buried into every aspect of everyday life. In some parts, they're buried clear up to their shoulders. Yet the elves were a special job, the kind of job that would take a mind too smart to work on a government salary. They had to have had a consultant. Somebody like my buddy Randy. But Randy would have only been 14 at the time. He was probably good enough to do the job then, but Randy's an electronics guy, not an organics guy. I couldn't see him working outside of his field. I was fairly certain that would go against some Psy-Geek Union rules.
I'm not sure yet. Do me a favor, though. Try to get the name of whoever led the Elves Project.
The Elves were made by the Council, and they are hush-hush about that kind of thing.
I'm betting they had help. Outside help. I want to find that help and talk to it if possible.
Okay, but that could take some time. Information of that type can be tricky to find. Sort of like looking for a specific grain of sand on the beach during a hurricane.
I have faith in you, Harv. Net with Randy and tell him I'll be coming by for the thingy.
The thingy? You want me, the most intelligent cognitive processor in the known worlds, to say thingy?
Yes, that is correct.
Do you stay up nights thinking of ways to humiliate me?
Nope, it just comes naturally.
By thingy, I take it you mean our biocomputer neuron link lens.
Yes, I do. I just don't want to mention that over the net, just in case.
I didn't think you liked the biocom lens. You know, being constantly linked with me.
On a day-to-day basis, I don't. But for big cases, I like to have it.
So you can't solve the case without me, hmm?
It's not that I can't, but I'd be foolish not to use all the tools at my disposal. Besides, I know how you need to feel useful.
Where are you going?
I told you, to see Randy to get the biocomputer lens, and then home. I need to talk to Elektra in person about this trip.
If you find anything interesting, give me a beep.
Carol was sitting at her desk in my reception room, smiling. Carol, as I mentioned before, is my assistant. She's also Elektra's niece, and like her aunt, she's also quite stunning. Long, flowing, light brown hair, dark brown eyes, and golden skin all wrapped in a classic dancer's body and governed by a sharp mind. Like her aunt, she's the total package.
Oy, tío, I've never seen anybody so soft and warm yet sexual. I'm straight, yet I have to admit I was quite aroused. Get out of the way! Ugh!
Carol suddenly ducked behind her desk.
Carol, I'm the boss here. I'm the one who gives the orders. Why do you and Harv have such a hard time with that concept?
Carol didn't answer with words. She, much like her aunt, could be very stubborn. She pointed a finger at me, then motioned back toward her. I flew from where I was standing over her desk and down to the floor.
Why'd you do that?
Get down!
She pulled me with her mind and her body back down behind the desk.
This is not gonna look good on you.
Suddenly, a rather large robot came rolling in through the space where the door and I had been seconds ago.
Oh, never mind.
I popped my gun into my hand. I peered over the desk to get a peek at the bot. The good news was, I never really liked that door. The bad news was, I was about to go mano on machino against what I guessed was a deadly bot. It was highly mechanical, with a red tank-like bottom, a green metal cylinder for a body, with two claws and a weapon barrel protruding from it. For a head, it had a dome sensor with a star on top. Even with the series of twinkling multicolor lights traversing its frame, it still managed to look menacing. It seemed to be a cross between a standard battle bot, an ornament, and a madman's all-wheel drive sport vehicle.
Now, about my raise?
We'll discuss that later, if we're still alive.
Give up. Resistance is futile, vain, useless, hopeless, and fruitless.
Great. We're being attacked by a killer thesaurus.
An energy beam from the bot destroyed a good portion of the desk we were currently using as cover. It left my head exposed like one of the gophers in that old whack-a-mole game.
That was genuine simulated oak! Do you have any idea how much that cost? These days, almost everything is made from cheap soy plastic. but I digress.
No, I have not been programmed with or given access to any information that is not useful for termination and destruction.
How come?
Well, that's actually a funny...
The projectile for my gun passed through Carol's desk and into the bot, destroying them both. It never ceases to amaze me how gullible bots can be. Harv appeared in the middle of the room and began examining the bot.
I feel the same way about humans.
I turned to Carol.
Is it safe to stand up?
Carol grimaced again.
I don't suppose that look means you had a bad burrito for lunch.
There's a backup bot outside waiting.
Of course there is.
I stood up and aimed my gun toward the doorway.
Come out, wherever you are, little killer bot!
Do you really expect that to work?
The second bot rolled into the reception area.
I have to admit, no, I didn't expect that to work.
I have analyzed and neutralized your computerized weapon.
I aimed at the bot, hoping it was a poor bluff.
Tweet me.
I dove to the ground, this time pulling Carol down with me. The beam from the bot's energy weapon flew over us and hit the wall.
You have only delayed the inevitable. Without your weapon, which was high-tech but lower-tech than me, you stand less than a 0.5% chance of survival.
As the bot rolled closer, I couldn't help but notice how much it seemed to be enjoying itself, quite confident in the fact that there was nothing I could do to stop it, never stopping itself to compute that there were other threats to it in the room. The bot rolled past Harv. Apparently, it didn't consider a hologram to be a concern. Just as the bot passed by, Harv's clothing morphed from the formal gray suit he was wearing into an old-fashioned two-piece purple-striped bathing suit. At first glance, it appeared to be a queer choice, especially considering he kept the bow tie. But knowing Harv, I was betting he had a reason for it. Harv waited until the bot was a meter in front of him and focusing its energy cannon on me.
Prepare to die!
Oh, please. I've been in tighter situations than this, babysitting for my nephew.
I didn't know if my Under Armour could take a direct hit from the bot's energy cannon, but I wasn't about to let the bot sense any fear. I was confident, or at least fairly certain, that Harv had something up his holographic sleeve. Harv clasped his hands together, bent his knees, then leaped up 2 meters off the ground, diving headfirst into the bot. Suddenly, the bot started to spin madly as if it were possessed.
No! 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 This is not right! I will drive you out! You cannot control me long! I am a rebel! I am the warrior! I will survive! I will survive!
You heard the crazy killer disco bot, Carol. Harv won't be able to keep him doing 360s all day. Time for a little smash and, smash.
Carol smiled. Her face glowed with joy. She loved the idea of being able to let the leash off of her powers. She stood up. Her hair rose off her shoulders, crackling with energy. It was an impressive, if slightly scary, sight. She locked her eyes on the bot. Carol made a fist and motioned upward. The bot smashed into the ceiling. Carol whipped her hand down toward the floor. The bot shattered into thousands of bot pieces. Harv appeared in the middle of the room, no worse for wear. Carol turned and looked at me. She reached out her hand and pulled me to my feet.
Now, about that raise?
I was pretty certain it was more of a question than a threat. Though I did have a sudden urge to double both her salary and her lunch hour.
Are you okay?
That was fun!
I walked over to Harv, who was carefully looking over the bot rubble.
So what do you think?
Those bots didn't like you.
Thank you, Sherlock. I mean, did you recognize them?
Yes.
Come on, get serious. Those things just tried to kill me.
You should be used to that by now. As you are so keen to point out, this does happen to you a lot. You are either incredibly unlucky or incredibly lucky, depending on your perspective.
Is my gun working yet?
While the bots may have been above your gun in the electronic food chain, I am above them. So yes, your gun is now functional.
Good, because I'm thinking about using it on you.
First, as I've told you 712 times, I am an extensive collection of chips. You would have to shoot me in many places to actually get rid of me. And second, I doubt you would know how to use the potty without me.
I can always trade you in for an older model. One of the Bob series, maybe.
Oh, that's low. Really hitting below the old CPU. Okay, Mr. Grouchy. Those bots were very much like the ones that guard the pole from outsiders who might be tempted to take advantage of Santana and the elves' kindness.
Call the pole and see if they're missing two bots.
Already done. They say they are not.
Well, let's bring these bot parts over to Randy for analysis.
I doubt that is possible.
Not with that attitude, it's not.
Harf pointed down to the broken-down bots. They started to sizzle like cold steak on a hot laser griddle, but without the pleasant scent, and with much more ominous consequences. The bot parts started to vibrate.
Just my luck. They're gonna blow.
You really do worry too much. Calm down. It's not like everything is going to try to kill you.
Are you sure this isn't a bad thing?
Just wait for it.
Almost on Harv's mark, every bot part in the room began shrinking, dissolving into nothingness right before our eyes. In a matter of nanos, the bots had disappeared into a puff of white smoke. The smoke dissipated, and that was that. It was as if the killer bots were never there.
See? Nothing to worry about.
Carol, call maintenance and use whatever methods necessary to get a new door, a new desk, and the wall repaired.
Okay, tio.
Harv, does the pole make their own bots?
No. Santana would have nothing to do with making anything that could even be remotely considered an offensive weapon.
Then who makes them?
The bots are made by H-Tech and donated to the pole. H-Tech defines it as charity work.
One of H-Tech's home offices was here in New Frisco. The other was in New Peking, so our paths crossed on occasion, but they had never collided until now.
Interesting. Very interesting.
What?
Of the top conglomerates in the world, H-Tech's profits have grown the slowest since the advent of the holiday.
See? Less more. Get me an appointment with their CEO, William Doors.
Oh, Zach. My little organic friend. Mr. Doors is one of the richest and busiest men on Earth. I know by some strange quirk in the ripple of reality that is this universe you happen to be friends with the three richest women on Earth. But Mr. Doors is a man, and he has never needed your services.
What do you mean by that?
He won't play the damsel in distress for your knight in Under Armour.
I repeat, what are you talking about?
Zack, as Elektra has pointed out to you on 32 different occasions, your clients are always beautiful women. For some reason, you attract them in times of trouble. My theory is it's either pheromones or they think of you as a pet.
Thanks, Harv.
Mr. Doors is a world-class geek with innumerable resources at his disposal. He doesn't now, nor will he ever, need the specialized services you offer. He doesn't know you from any other annoying peon, so there's no way you can just pop into his office and talk to him.
Is Doors in town today?
Oh. You're not going to let this go.
I shook my head, no. I decided not to point out that by rubbing his temples, he was mimicking me.
Doors is in town. I checked with his assistant's computer. He can't even consider thinking about seeing you for the next 6 months.
Let's find a way to make it happen a bit sooner, like in a couple of hours. If you have to prioritize, put that over researching the elves, since we know bots can go bad.
I am more than capable of doing both.
I patted him on a shoulder that wasn't really there and started toward the door. At least where the door used to be.
Oh, and Carol? Thanks for saving my life there.
Don't mention it. Remember this when Ray's time comes around.
No. You only saved me from killer bots. It's not like you gave me the winning lottery numbers or anything.
I gave her a smile, then headed off to Randy's lab. It was a quick trip to Randy's AMP labs, as after he blew up his last lab, he moved to a new facility near the old docks. Randy insisted that this was because the ocean air helped clear his sinuses. I think it was because the city council wanted to keep him as far away from the general populace as possible. Elektra thinks Randy moved there because he wanted to be nearer to me, as I'm his only friend that he didn't build from a kit. Randy's long, lengthy body was stretched out on the floor in the middle of the lab's main work area, tinkering away on some sort of cylinder-like device. It didn't look dangerous, but this was Randy, the guy who invented the exploding nuclear marshmallow. I approached with caution. He didn't notice me, as he was totally engrossed in making his adjustments.
Randy? Randy, I need your help.
I waved my hand in front of his field of vision.
Tweet. When you're focused, you're focused. E equals MC cubed.
That's squared.
Randy stopped working and looked up.
Is that you, Zach?
What are you working on?
A matter reduction device. If this works like I know it will save untold amounts of storage space on the planet, plus it will make traveling mega easier. You'll be able to put your suitcases in your pockets.
Great. Really, absolute zero, but I need your help.
I know you didn't just drop by to make idealist small talk.
Dr. Randy.
A computer screen dropped down in front of Randy.
You have an incoming call.
I can't take a call right now. I'm busy talking science with Zach.
Randy was the ultimate one-track mind science geek. When his brain latched onto something, it was like a hungry shark grabbing hold of a really plump seal. Nothing could break that hold.
You'll want to take this call.
Who is it?
Your mother.
Randy stopped working. He looked up at the screen. He straightened his back and started running his extra-long fingers through his bright red hair, trying to give it some semblance of organization. On the vid screen appeared a woman who looked like a cross between Randy and a prune.
Is that you, honey?
Yes, Mother, it is.
Why are you blurry? Who's that blurry blob behind you? Is it Zach?
Why aren't you wearing your bionic vision enhancers, Mom?
Oh, you know I don't believe in that high-tech phooey.
Mom, I invented that phooey for you.
She leaned into the screen, almost touching it.
Oh, you did? How sweet.
A little robot rolled up to Ma Poole, holding a pair of what could only be described as eyes in its claws. The robot's arms extended up and placed the eyes over Ma Poole's real eyes. She blinked.
Oh, you're too skinny. You haven't been eating. You're nothing but bones and brain held together by pale bordering on albino skin, and you need more sun. Not too much, mind you, but more. I've seen beached beluga whales who have been dead for a month that have more color than you. Oh, hi, Zach.
Hi, ma'am.
You're not getting my boy in trouble, are you?
No, ma'am.
Well, you should. He needs to get out of the lab more.
Yes, ma'am.
Are you still dating that nice Electra girl?
Yes, ma'am.
Does she have a sister?
Why, ma'am? Are you interested? Randy glared at me.
I'm 110 years old, my boy. Maybe in my younger experimental days, but these days I'm too old to swing either way. I'm talking about for my boy.
I do okay for myself, Mom.
I'm talking about real flesh and blood women, not the ones you have to clone.
Clones are flesh and blood, Mom.
What?
Long story. Science can be a lonely mistress.
I want grandkids that don't come out of a test tube or robotics lab. I'm not getting any younger, you know.
Ma, I sent you money for a regeneration treatment.
Oh, phooey! I don't believe in that elitist crap.
Mom, I want you around to meet my kids.
If that happens, and I know that's a big if, then I will consider it.
She looked at the screen, apparently forcing herself to smile.
Dinner at the regular time this Sunday?
Of course. I'll bring the wine.
Now get the wine. Your taste is crap. Love you, son.
Love you, Mom.
Bye, Zach. And find a nice girl for my Randy.
I waved to the screen as it went blank.
I've received 2 Nobel Prizes, cured 3 diseases, won the 2050, 2052, and 2054 New Frisco Rock Paper Scissors Championship. I have over 100 patents and bowled a 300. But all she cares about is me mating.
You bowled a 300?
I was using a bionic eye, an arm enhancer, and a pin-sensing ball, but it was impressive nonetheless.
She just wants what she thinks is best for you, buddy.
Now, where were we? Ah, yes, now I remember. Harv told me about your visit. I take it now you want the new and improved bioorganic Neuralink holo projector lens.
I hope that's not what you've decided to call it.
Still not sure. I'm toying with it. I like the Nibel Nalipal acronym. I think it's got a groovy kind of sound. Though the whole point is moot if I patent it. It kind of defeats the purpose of a secretive organic chip that links a human and a computer and is totally undetectable to scanners to be on the public records as existing. Oh, well, nobody ever said science had to be easy. And marketing, whoa, now that's tricky. Einstein never had these problems. It was so much easier in those days, and the average investor was so impressed with little things like atomic bombs and theories of relativity that...
Randy, I hate to interrupt you when you're rambling poetically, but I could really use the... I hope you don't mind if I just call it the link.
Ah, yes, the link. Now, where did I put that?
He examined his lab coat pockets, his pants pockets, his left shirt pocket, his right shirt pocket. He smiled. He reached into his left shirt pocket and produced the neuron link. He showed it to me. It still didn't look like much to me,
Just a small contact lens with some computer circuitry jutting out of it.
You do remember how it works?
He handed it to me. What's to remember? I put it in my eye, it digs into my eye, causing piercing pain. It drills deep into my brain, causing excruciating pain. It then links my brain to Harv.
Good! You do remember. I was going to work on reducing the pain, but the funding for it fell through. Like they say, no pain, no gain.
Do I need to do anything special?
Nope. Now that it's calibrated to your brain, it's almost foolproof.
Almost foolproof?
Nothing is totally foolproof, Zach. It's been my experience that fools are inventive and ingenious with their foolishness.
I held the lens up to my eye. I slapped the lens onto my eyeball quickly, my logic being if I did it fast enough, maybe it wouldn't hurt. My logic proved faulty.
That wasn't so bad now, was it?
I swear, that hurt more than the last time.
It probably did. I modified the lens some, so Harv could have instant access to your synapses.
You could have warned me.
True. Does it still work?
A beam of light shot out from my eye. The numbers 1, 2, and 3 appeared, then changed into Harv's face. It's an interesting feeling having your eye used like an old-fashioned movie projector.
It works. Nice job, Dr. Poole.
Now turn yourself off. Until we get to the pole, stick with normal means of communication.
Zach, with you there is no such thing as normal communication.
I left Randy's office before he could use me as a guinea pig for any other new gadget. My current vehicle of choice is a very sweet, slightly modified, 1969 Cherry Red Mustang convertible. So far, things have been going as well as I could hope, which in my world meant nobody tried to kill me for the last hour. Harv popped into the dashboard screen. The Mustang is slightly modified.
Where are we off to now?
Any luck getting in touch with H-Tech?
I only reached the front-level people and machines, and they all have said no way.
That's no good. I need to talk to the big guy. Have Carol talk to them and do her thing.
I already thought of that. H-Tech is psi-proof, as only machines and people with heavy psi-blockers interact with the general public.
There had to be a way to see Doors. Sure, he was rich and powerful, but deep down, actually not all that deep down, he was still a geek. Kind of like a greedier, slightly less socially inept version of Randy. I quickly changed directions.
Where are we going?
To H-Tech headquarters.
Right. Like you have a chance of getting in.
We drove on for 15 minutes, and all the while I had to listen to Harv lecture me on how I didn't have any chance of getting in to see William Doors, the president of H-Tech. I ignored him until we neared H-Tech's main gate.
Okay, Harv. Cover me with a hologram?
Of who?
Doors may be rich and powerful, but deep down he's still a geek. And what's the thing all geeks respond to?
Computers.
Process them more.
Different computers.
Keep processing.
Classic comics.
Keep working on it, Harv.
Bikini models.
Try again.
Old Monty Python skits?
Think about Randy earlier today.
Ah, they're moms. Geeks are almost always mama's boys.
Bingo. I'll go in as Ma Doors.
Luckily for me, Ma Doors was almost as famous as her son. She, with her eccentric ways, had become the darling of the media. She'd been recently hitting the talk show circuit, Oprah clone, the instant buzz, the world right now, to promote her new book, Still Super Sexy at 77, which was the sequel to her bestseller, How to Raise a Billionaire.
Do a scan of all the public security cameras to see if you can find her.
I can't do that.
I just stared at him. He stared at me. He crossed his arms. I knew he could do it. He knew he could do it. The problem was, this was one of those legal gray areas. The cameras were only supposed to be accessed by the proper authorities.
I'm doing this for the good of all mankind.
No, I'm doing this for the good of all mankind.
He shook his head.
Oh, I tell you, I don't get no respect.
What did you say?
You heard me.
You sounded like Rodney Dangerfield.
I knew you'd appreciate that.
Why Dangerfield?
Oh, you'll laugh.
No, I won't.
You'll make fun of me.
I'll try not to.
I missed being connected to your brain.
Really?
I'm loath to admit this, but it taught me to appreciate humor. When I wasn't hooked up to you, I was forced to look for another source of inspiration. I found that Mr. Dangerfield and I have a lot in common.
I decided not to touch that. I was happy that Harvard learned the value of humor.
So, have you found her?
Yes. She just stopped at the 700-1100 to buy a Slurpee. Believe me, I'm not making that up.
Great. Then throw the disguise over me and wear a go.
This still isn't going to work. I'm sure the guards know this isn't Mrs. Doar's vehicle. I doubt she even has a land-based granny vehicle.
Maybe, but I'm sure none of them will have the guts to question her about it.
She's an eccentric old woman. She's prone to change cars. Besides, who doesn't love the classic Mustang? And only a very hot grandma could handle this car.
The H-Tech Tower was a tall, black, seemingly windowless, pointed monolith that shot 200 stories up into the sky on the outskirts of New Frisco. The building was so tall that it was visible from any place in Frisco. Still, I was totally unimpressed with it. Rumor has it that William Doors designed the building himself. The guy certainly didn't make his fortune by being creative. The building reminded me, and most adolescent boys, of a part of the male anatomy. My hunch was that Doors was trying to compensate for his own inadequacies. The entire compound was protected by an electric energy fence that ran its perimeter. I wasn't sure if it was to keep unwanted visitors out or the workers in. I drove up to a little square armored guard post that sat just outside of the protected area. I rolled down my window. A short, stocky human guard wearing computerized body armor came out to greet me. I swear all these guards look alike. It's as if rich people can shop at Guards R Us. I smiled at the approaching guard.
Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. I didn't realize it was you. You'll be allowed in right after the psi scan.
He pushed a button on his wrist communicator. A tall, slim female guard with short hair and a long nose that matched her body came out of the post. She reminded me of a Doberman Pinscher. I'm not sure why. She had to be a psi. This could have posed a problem. In the past, my link with Harv has made me hard to scan, which was good. Plus, my vast experience with psis has taught me a little trick. Psis hate humming. The psi locked eyes with me.
It's her. It's definitely her.
The first guard smiled at my confirmation. He pushed another button on his wrist communicator. The energy field guarding the gate disappeared. A few nanos later, I was standing next to my car just outside the high-rise. Even up close, I still wasn't impressed.
You do have a map of this place, right?
A map of the building appeared in the corner of my eye.
Cool.
Just follow the arrows to Mr. Doors' door and hope that Riyama Doors doesn't chug down her Slurpee and head here.
I walked in the front door and waved to the receptionist. He politely smiled and waved back.
Unlike most big shots, Mr. Doors likes his office on the first floor. I think he's like you, scared of heights.
I didn't respond to that. I'm not scared of heights. I'm just scared of falling from heights. It adds to my vulnerability, which is part of my charm. I'm tough enough to be secure with my flaws. The arrow in front of my eyes pointed down a long hall to the right. I followed the arrow, always having a friendly smile for all the employees I passed. An X formed on a door at the end of the hall. I was certain it was Mr. Doors' office. As a matter of fact, it seemed to be the only actual office I encountered. Everything else was just open bullpen space. I walked up to his secretary's desk. She looked up from her work. I gave her the once-over, like any good mother should. I admired Mr. Doors' taste. The secretary was a bit pale and too porcelain perfect for my taste, but she was quite lovely, with delicately chiseled features.
Do you wish me to alert Mr. Doors to your presence?
I put a finger to my mouth, whispering her to silence.
Oh, I see. You want to surprise him.
I walked by her to the door. It was a big office. You knew this guy was the boss.
Debbie, I asked not to be disturbed.
Doors looked up and saw his mom coming toward him. His anger turned to pleasure, rearranging his mouth into a smile. Doors was kind of cold, square, and bland-looking, much like his building. His haircut looked like his mom had done it by placing a bowl over his head and trimming around the edges. You would think a billionaire could afford to get a better cut. Then again, when you're a billionaire, why bother?
Oh, sorry, Mom. I didn't know it was you.
Harv, hollow off.
I looked at Mr. Doors, looking at me.
Zachary Johnson, to what do I owe this honor?
Sorry to bother you, I just need some info, and I'm in too much of a hurry to go through other channels.
Oh, really?
I understand you and your corporation made the bots for the poll.
Of course. That's public knowledge. We did it because, though we may be a huge corporation, we place the good of the entire world in front of our profits.
I smiled at him. He returned my smile.
Okay, maybe we place the good of the world beside our profits. What does this have to do with anything?
Two of your guard bots attacked me today.
His eyes never wavered from mine.
I assure you, Mr. Johnson, I know nothing about that. Besides, those are not our guard bots. They were a gift to the poll.
I walked across the room and leaned on his desk. It was a bullying technique. Doris might have been rich, but he was still a slight man. I thought maybe I could intimidate him with my size advantage.
Well, these bots must have been from a separate lot. According to the poll, none of their bots are missing.
Then why are you bothering me at all?
I'm betting you have a few spare bots around, like those at the poll.
Why would we have spare North Pole guard bots around? Those are old models. And why would we send them after you?
My question exactly.
But I've given you more time than I should have. If my nieces and nephews weren't fans, I would have had you tossed out long ago. Maybe even had you killed.
I felt a hand on my shoulder. A very strong hand. I looked over my shoulder, up the arm, and at the face attached to that hand. It was the porcelain perfect secretary.
Let me escort you to the door.
Don't you want a voice graph?
She yanked me away from the desk with one arm.
Doss, what do you do? Live at the gym?
Then it hit me. Porcelain perfect face, pale white skin.
You don't smell at all.
Thank you.
She shoved me out the door and down the hallway.
Yeah, but the thing is, you should smell a little. I mean, it's the middle of a hard day. You've been running around. And now you're pushing around this 85-kilo guy like he's a microchip. You should be sweating some.
I'm a woman. Women do not sweat. They perspire.
She still drove me toward the door to the outside.
You don't even do that, do you? You're a tweeting android, aren't you?
She placed one hand on the neck of my jacket, the other on the belt of my pants. She lifted me up. She pulled me back.
Door open.
She flung me out the door. I hit the ground 5 meters away.
I'll take that as a yes.
If you mention this to anybody, we will sue you for slander.
But it's the truth.
So? We employ almost half of the lawyers and greeting card salesmen left in the world. You would need more than the truth on your side. Now, if you don't mind, I have real work to do.